Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Towards the Light, Leaning Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics, and we do welcome you to ring in to ask questions or make comments during the show. We've got a special announcement this week. Liv Gonkov, and I hope I've pronounced her name correctly, is working on a project with the American Television Discovery Channel. They are working on a show entitled Phenomena, looking for NDEers who don't mind sharing their NDEs on camera. Again, this is for the Discovery Channel, a show entitled Phenomena. If anyone is interested in being on camera and talking about their near-death experience, please do contact me immediately, and I will be pleased to forward your information to Liz. That should be pretty exciting. I'm so pleased we're getting more information about the near-death experience out there. Well, it would seem that NDEs and similar experiences do seem to give people almost superhuman powers to endure and rise above all adversity. This week, our guest is no exception to this rule, and it's a very powerful story that we are just about to hear, so put on your seatbelts. Let us welcome to Toward the Light an individual who died in a fire at age 5. Welcome, Peggy Porter. Hello, Peggy.
Hi. Thank you so much for this privilege and this honor to be able to speak about this experience that has just touched my life and changed my life completely.
Well, I'm sure it has, and I'm sure that is an understatement for sure. So why don't you tell us about your experience, starting with the big NDE that you had at age 5?
Well, what led to this experience is at the age of 5, my clothes caught fire in an outdoor fire. My brother and I were outdoors, and we had a farm. We lived on a farm. And I came home from with a little dress from church, and I sat down on the grass, which had already been burned. And anyway, one thing, how it happened is not as important as to what happened later. But my clothes did ignite. I ran, of course, being 5 years old, not knowing the stop, drop, and roll rule. My older brother tried to put me out, and he was 5 years older than I was at the time, so he was around 10 or 11. He tried to put me out, and one of my saddest memories to date is seeing him turn his back on me and cover his face and crying against a big oak tree that we were under. And I just remember that look that he gave me. But my mother did hear me scream and rolled me and put me out. And it was we got to the hospital, and I was burned third degree over 65% of my body. Now, third degree, of course, is full-thickness burns where, it really burns into the muscles. And I did not have any skin from below my calf down toward my ankle all the way up to my ears. And I was just like I'd been peeled. But it was a severe, very severe burn. And I'm laying in the emergency room seeing all these people running around like crazy. And I blinked my eyes, or just shut my eyes for a moment, it seemed. And when I opened them back up, the light was so tremendously bright, and I knew that there were lights on me, surgical lights on me in the ER, but this was different. It was so intense that I couldn't open my eyes. I was looking through my eyelashes, and I kept telling people, turn out the light, turn out the light. I just couldn't see, and I couldn't understand. I could see them in silhouette. The light was so intense behind them that they just were shadowy figures standing in front of me. And then I realized, the next thing I said was, I don't hurt anymore. It doesn't hurt. And I knew then that now the people that I'm assuming are still the doctors and nurses are now being lit from within. It was like they were the source of the light themselves. And I started talking to them, and I realized something was different. I didn't know what, and I went, it doesn't hurt anymore. It doesn't hurt anymore.
Now let me ask you something. Were you in the operating theater at the time?
No, I'm still in an emergency room, trauma room. And this was the initial trauma when they first got me to the hospital. So I'm laying there looking around, and what had happened was that I had coded, and I knew that now I know that I had coded and flatlined on them, and my heart had stopped. And I was laying there, and one female voice, it was a female entity. I mean, it was, you could tell, just like we tell people now, that male and female. I knew that this female was telling me, it's going to be all right, it's going to be all right. And I said, well, and I'm talking, but I realize I'm hearing them, but I don't see their mouths moving. And I'm the only one talking with my mouth, and I'm going, where am I? What is this? You know, it looks the same to me in a way. It's still the emergency room, but I know something's different. And she says to me, it's okay. The light, you'll get used to the light in a minute. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. And then the light starts softening. It's a very indirect light, but it turns into a beautiful pink and gold feeling color like you get it at sunset.
That's exactly what I experienced, too. That's really nice to hear you describing that. Go ahead.
and then I realized I'm the only one talking with my mouth, because I'm asking a dozen questions. I mean, just firing off questions. What is this? What is that? And I finally say, where am I? What's going on? And she imparts to me, again, not using her mouth, I realize that she's talking to me, and I hear her. She says, do you know what happens to baby animals? Now, I'm 5 years old, so I wouldn't understand near death, and near death has not been coined before. You know, that phrase was unknown to me, of course. And she goes, do you know what happens to baby animals in the wintertime? And I said, yeah. And she said, what is that called? And I said, they hibernate. And, I mean, because this is what a five-year-old would understand. She goes, well, we're going to pretend you're hibernating. What baby animal do you want to pretend to be? But we're going to sleep now, and you're going to hibernate. You're going to stay. You're going to pretend. Let's just play a game. You're going to be hibernating. What do you want to be? And when I told her, I said, oh, I think I'll be a bunny. You know, I want to be a little bunny rabbit. Well, then I'm just, all of a sudden, everything changes into the most beautiful forest. The colors change. It's just much like Earth, but it's just much more vivid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Much more vivid. And the perfect temperature, the perfect everything, greenest grass, the most beautiful. I had never seen a redwood tree. I was born and raised in Louisiana, and we don't have redwood trees in Louisiana. The most beautiful, huge trees. I mean, it's like I'm transported to another place. And I play, and I stay there. I did know one thing that I got immediately. I felt the most when that light did change to that pink and that gold and that beautiful glow. I felt the most unconditional, immediate sense of being known completely. Everything about me was totally known by all those around me. I was connected to everybody in that room, everybody around me. There was no separation between me and them. There was no separation of thought. If I thought anything, I had the answer before I even formed the question in my head. It was everything moved at the speed of thought. It was just the most amazing thing. And I'm 5 years old, and I'm grasping this. And now looking back, I'm going, wow, you know, what an experience, you know, for a five-year. I mean, I was five, and I'm going, I knew instinctively I was known by these people, and they were connected to me. They were family, more family than I knew my own human family here on this earth. It was just a different connection. It was a more deeper connection. And I was totally loved and accepted and by them, and I then realized that there was this sense of there's no such thing is right and wrong. There's no judgment. There is no condemnation whatsoever. there's only acceptance. There is only love, and it is just everything. There's no mistakes or accidents. And you would think that I just had a horrific accident that totally changed my physical life. I mean, and it did totally change my physical life. It even changed my physical appearance. People today, though, that look at me have no clue that I'm burned, that I'd ever gone through such an ordeal. And I just think that's just an added grace, you know. But
well, hence the opening statement that I made, and I've noticed this so much about experiences, that it would seem like we've got these almost human, superhuman qualities as a result of these experiences to rise above so much and come out shining, as it were. But you're sharing this information about the unconditional love and no right or wrong or condemnation. I think people can't say that enough, because it is so true, and eventually people are going to grok that. They're going to really come to know that this is the case. This is really, really wonderful and very important for people to hear. So please continue. This is wonderful, Peggy.
That is the most, I have tried so many times to just really connect to that feeling of love and unconditional love. And like I said, a lot of people have said, well, why did you have to go through such a horrible ordeal that took so many years to heal and to get over? I mean, that was definitely an accident, you know, that had to be an accident. You don't believe in accidents. I think it's more about, it's not what happens to us in life, in this physical life. It's what happens through us as a result of those experiences.
Excellent.
And
yes,
the fruit that it bears in our life and how it changes us are the message that we can carry to other people. By no means do I think anybody has to go through a tragic experience in order to know that there's something better, you know.
Exactly.
But hopefully people who have had extraordinary experiences are have stepped at that threshold and seen through that veil, at least maybe by sharing these experiences and having a program like yours, which is so important, if we can give that a voice, that they won't have to experience it and find it that way. I know I work in healthcare and have all my life because that's the way I grew up. I mean, I spent most of my time around caregivers, and because of my burns, and I just admire these people so much, even though our health system in this country is broken today and it needs a lot of revamping. I still realize that is just such a wonderful platform for people to really share the message and to really help people, because people fear not necessarily death. I learned very early on from the age of 5, there is no such thing as death. There is only change, because all I did was blink my eyes for an instant and something changed, and I was in another place. But everything was still as vivid and real, and it was not a dream. It was not oxygen deprivation. I don't care what anybody tells you. It was more vivid and more real than what I know within the body with my 5 senses to be real.
Well, exactly, so, and there's been, you know, monumental proof that, you know, there's such a dramatic difference between hallucinations and oxygen deprivation and all of that stuff, because when the brain flatlines, it flatlines, and nothing can be coming through the brain. And so these are really, really powerful points. Again, I don't think we can mention them enough to really bring home the fact that we do survive physical death, and just like you said, it's just a change, it's a transition, it's movement, and moving into a higher vibrational frequency really is what it is.
Yes, everything is energy, and it all vibrates at a certain frequency, and that's the other thing that amazes me is that the first time I ever went to a funeral, I had checked out of the hospital. It was during one of my furloughs, and I was, because I was in the hospital for a very long time, off and on for 4 years, and it took 38 burn-related surgeries to put me back together. I tell people I'm pieced together like a patchwork quilt. But I've heard Esther Hicks say this. If you're familiar with Esther, anybody out there, and Abraham, she channels Abraham, and she says it's impossible to be on, or Abraham does, be tuned in to 96.5 on your radio and listen to 101.1 AM on another frequency. So it is just tuning in, and like I said before, I want to demystify this process for people because I don't want, it's not just a select few of us, we're all created equal. We all have that connection to spirit for one reason or another through the influences in our lives, our family, our religion, our culture, the part of the country that we're born in or the part of this world that we're born in, the culture that exists in that area. It just depends on whether or not we've been open and stayed open to that. Like I said, I had never been to a funeral until I went to my grandfather's funeral. And I had just come out of the hospital, and I had just had my first NDE. I awoke. What I didn't tell you was after the emergency room visit, I went into a coma and slipped into a coma and woke up on my 6th birthday, 30 days later. I thought I'd just been out overnight, and I'd lost completely 30 days. So, but in the whole 30 days, I'm in another place, in another existence, playing and having the time of my life and knowing that I'm visiting there. And at any moment, I know that I can go back. And I would tell them, okay, I've got to go back now. My mother's calling me. You know, and this was just one of many NDEs, because when you're burned, and like I said, I went into surgery 38 times under general anesthesia, and in those days, I'm dating myself, the anesthesia of choice was ether, and because being a burn patient and being a child and also being as injured as I was, it was very hard to balance that anesthesia and know what to give me, and I went into cardiac arrest on more than one occasion. So that, and then I would slip into this other place.
I wondered about that, yeah, because I think, you know, it's interesting. I've spoken with a number of people who've been through, you know, really traumatic experiences like that. For example, one person who dealt with electrocution, and had an NDE, and it seems that when people go through burns or electrocution or what have you, they will end up having cardiac arrest after the fact, and then ensuing near-death experiences. So that's a very interesting note there. And did you experience a cardiac arrest during surgery whilst you were out, or was it...
No, I was already under when it would happen.
Okay, that's what, yes. I thought. That's what I thought.
And I got most of this information from my parents, who told me that and at one point they were pronouncing me. And I've had stories from both my father and my mother separately, and from different members of the family who happened to be in vigil at the hospital at the times, at the different times that I went in. They would also recount what... from their perspective, what was going on. So piecing all of this together as I got older was and started writing these stories down and making sure that they did collaborate, you know, and that they were complementary to each other, you know, that one person didn't, that it wasn't just me, you know. I wanted to make sure that other people were aware of this. But I remember going to my grandfather's funeral, and I was 6 years old, and I just couldn't understand why everybody was so devastated and crying, and it was the first time I'd ever seen my father cry, and I thought, you know, but he's just asleep. And I remember telling everybody, going around the room, going, he's just sleeping, you know, which probably annoyed the dickens out of everybody. But to me, I was just trying to get my, you know, it was like, why aren't you listening to me? Why are you crying? He's only asleep. He's only resting. Because to me, that's what I did, you know, so...
Yes, and how enlightened that was, actually, to...
You know, but I grew up knowing this part of... this was just normal and natural, and I thought everybody experienced it. I didn't know that not everyone did. And having worked in healthcare all of my life, I would hear stories recounted, and people are very... they were very afraid to open up and tell other people for fear of, you know, oh, they're going to think I'm crazy or loony or whatever. But I was always open to hear, or either I would seek it out. Did you see anything? Did you have any experience? Can you tell me, you know, do you remember anything in the recovery room? Do you remember anything in the operating room? And I find it fascinating to hear the stories that people would tell me.
Wonderful. I'm pleased you've been doing that. That's excellent.
Oh, I did that throughout my career in the hospital and everything. Yeah, as I grew and because I'm an administrator now of medical centers all over the state, in the state of Florida. And so I do some, but when I had more patient contact, I did, even with coworkers. And I found that most people have, almost everyone has been touched with an experience that they can't explain, or some kind of metaphysical, paranormal, supernatural occurrence, something, whether they're really, really open to talk about it or not, but something at some point in their life has happened. And they are willing to share it to the right person who's willing to hear it and is not judgmental about it, or doesn't just, you know, blow it off as, oh, this, or try to find a logical explanation. There are magical, mystical things that happen to us daily. Our lives should be full of magic every day.
Absolutely.
And inspiring every day. And I think we have kind of get so busy, caught up in the mechanism of life and in our daily routines, that we close ourselves off to that. That, and too, I think, as well-meaning as our religious practices are, whatever your religious background, some doctrines and dogmas steer us away from that, you know. And a lot of that is out of fear, and there is nothing to fear.
Absolutely
there
nothing.
There is nothing to fear. To me, fear is the absence of love, and this is the most complete love you will ever, ever know. I mean, this is just, and if there's one other thing I could tell you about this, is just that to somebody who's listening, the spiritual realm and the physical realm is happening. It's omnipresent. It's happening all around you right now, all at once. You are just in this frequency, in this range that of being human. You're an eternal being having a human experience right now, and you're just stuck within this radio dial. Your radio dial only goes so far, but you can fine-tune and hear more if you're willing to work at this. And it's only because we have drowned this out, that voice out, you know, and are tuned out to it, and we are just stuck in our own little rut, so to speak. And if nothing else, just be open to receive more and make up your own mind about it. You know, I don't believe everything I hear, and I don't believe everything I see, especially even people who have a story similar to mine. I take what resonates in my soul and my spirit, and then I integrate that as part of my truth if it rings true to me. And then I integrate that into my life. And so I try to always keep an open mind, even now, you know.
That's excellent. And I think it is important to have the gift of discernment, to trust in your intuition. And also I encourage people like you are, it's vitally important to have an open mind and also to do research, to dig and study, ask questions. In fact, it's paramount that people ask questions, because things are never what they seem. And this is a very, very important point to make. And I'm also thinking that as more and more people start to understand the truth of our being interdimensional and multi-sensory beings, that some of these fallacies, this erroneous thinking, will start to dissipate, and that people will become less afraid, because really the truth is that life is eternal and that we do not cease to be when we leave our physical bodies behind. Intuition, I think, is the key, and that also leads me to the question that you, besides doing this work that you have been doing in the medical world, that you also are a clairvoyant, a seer, and a counselor. And when did you start doing that? And was it your near-death experiences that kind of gave you the courage and the confidence to use this in your life?
I think it came about much later after I've had multiple NDEs as a result of cardiac arrest and of just being in the hospital and going through all the debridements that I went through. Also, out-of-body experiences, because I did have to kind of grin and bear it and detach from the pain and from the treatments on a daily basis, where they would come in and just, you know, it's hard to explain to a child that who has no skin, who looks like they've been peeled alive, that you're coming to, in order to heal, we're going to come in twice a day and scrape what skin you do you have grown back off, and because your skin grows from deeper layers upward, outward. That was very hard for me to understand, and so as a point of that, I had to prepare myself in advance for everything they did, every time they touched me, because they had no place to touch me other than just every place they did touch me, they just kind of stuck to me, you know, their hands kind of stuck to me. Without skin, that's just what you do. I think it came much later in life through my later teenage years, and I started... in fact, there for a while, I wanted to distance myself from it a little bit because I had just really kind of put this all behind me. I'm healed now, and I got very grounded in my physical body, repairing my physical body, and getting the use of it back, because of course I had learned to walk again. And then when you're burned, everything kind of constricts and draws together, which I had that problem. Where I couldn't walk flat-footed on the floor, and because my body was twisted and contorted. But today, I'm happy to say I have none of that, no residual of any of that. In fact, I went on. It's part of the many miracles come out of my story, and I just never know where to begin. One thing that they did do for me was to straighten me and to get me to stand upright was to give me dance lessons. And a wonderful gift of dance came out of that, and dance was just so much a part of my life, and I'm talking ballet and that sort of dance. And I went on to own my own dance studio and become a teacher and a professional dancer, which was my passion. So, I mean, I may not have danced. I may have danced without having had this horrible experience, but I don't think I would have danced with as much joy and satisfaction or with liberation that I did, knowing that I had the freedom of movement back and I had regained that in my body.
That brings me to a really good point that, you know, in order to appreciate something in our lives, we need to experience the opposite often.
Yeah, and that's true. That is so true. But I tell everybody, you don't have to go through a bad experience to know to celebrate and stay alive in this moment now.
That's what I'm telling
them. Stay present in this moment and enjoy the life in this body and through this five senses. Like I said, I believe I'm an eternal being, just having an experience now in this physical body. And I think I did set up things in my life that would help me learn the lessons that I've learned and to appreciate life and to appreciate things that I may not have gotten that appreciation had, you know, things had been different. I do think we do come here with a blueprint. My belief system is such that it was a long time before I opened myself up to the thought of reincarnation. But then the more I studied nature and realized everything is on a life cycle and that everything is replaced and nothing truly dies. There is no such thing as death. It just changes form.
Exactly.
Just changes, the energy just changes. If I set fire to a piece of paper right now while I'm talking on this, on the radio, if I set fire to that piece of paper, the elements of that paper are still in this room with me. They're just broken up into other, you know, into another form. And that's what happens to us. We just change our form, and it's so instantaneous. It is so liberating. It's so wonderful. And I think if you know anybody that's going through, I think people fear the process of dying. We're so grounded in
yes.
our physical bodies.
Yes.
It's the process of dying, and that can be extremely painful. Take it from me.
Me too.
It is quite an ordeal.
Yes.
I mean, it can be. And in other, you know, but, and that's what people fear, is the unknown of that.
I think so, too.
And how to deal with that. And I've had several family members who have been given diagnoses that offered no hope. And it used to devastate me and hurt me really badly. But then I realized what a wonderful gift, what a wonderful blessing to know that knowledge in advance, and you have so much time left now that you're aware of, in order to live every moment in the present moment and to stay very present in that moment, to validate and love and say the things you need to do to your family and your friends, and to appreciate and to go back and review things and really just really relish this time. And how, you know, and the lessons and the growth and the gifts that will come out of it, you know, in a lot of ways that's a really blessed thing to know for some people. It's difficult. It's scary to a lot of people. But if I just need someone to understand, anyone to understand that, you know, just surrender and trust. You're at the right place at the right time. Everything's right on schedule. And you're coming into this world was precisely timed. And you're leaving and changing and transitioning is also a very blessed, precisely timed event. And if you are aware of that, then you will make the most of all of it, because this is a schoolyard. We come here with a, kind of a preset plan, an outline, so to speak. Nothing's written in stone. But we come here with, I want to learn this, 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 and this, and I think this is the best avenue I can do it in. And the thing that truly makes us different, that makes us different from one another, is the choices that we make. And with every choice, there are multiple outcomes that can come out of that choice. Your job here is to gather enough data to make the best and highest choice for all concerned, the most compassionate choice, not only for yourself, but for others around you.
I think a big part of that, too, is, again, listening to our intuition, because our intuition is the voice of the soul speaking to us and guiding us along. And
right.
People need to remember that, as opposed to being waylaid by thoughts of fear or fearful influences coming from other people. We really need to go into the inner sanctum and listen to that and trust it, because it is reliable. And that's certainly what my experience throughout my life has taught me.
I totally agree. And one way, like I said, we're all created equal, and we
yes.
all have the same connection to spirit. We're all clairvoyant. We're all clairaudient.
Absolutely.
We're all clairsentient, meaning that we all are sensitive. You can walk into a room and you automatically pick up vibes about a person or about the energy or the atmosphere that's in that room. You can tell when you step in the room and there's people in there, whether an argument has just occurred and you just stepped in the room at the wrong time, you can just sense there's something different. You can step into a room and feel love and joy, and without anybody speaking to you, you know that atmosphere, you pick up on those vibes. Everybody has those. Everybody has hunches. Everybody has just different things that come to them, and whether they explain, this is all intuition. This is all the way that we should be tapping into, and by getting quiet and still, we hear that voice again, an inner voice. It's a knowing. It's what do you call it, your voice of conscience or whatever. It is your divine guidance, and that and your emotions are two key points of your compass that you need to look at and set aside time each day to really take a deep breath and just listen, you know, and pause for a moment to know where you need to go next, or how you feel about a certain thing. Tap into your feelings, your emotions. You're a feeling, emotional human being, and that is the one beautiful thing about being in the body, is that we have that to help steer us and guide us. Not only that, I do believe that we do have I do believe in all sorts of other guidance as well. I do believe that before I came here, I sat around and talked with others who have guided me. When I spoke earlier about the people that were in the room with me when I was in my coma, I knew I was connected to them. I was known by them, that there was nothing that they didn't know about me and totally loved me. I couldn't tell you any of them's name. I couldn't tell you. I do not know them in this lifetime on the earth, but I know them there. And
I
know that
when... I was going to ask you if they might... Because it sounded to me like they may have been members of your soul group, some of whom are incarnate on the physical plane, and maybe you've not met them yet, and some who remain on the other side, and are sources of guidance and protection. What do you think about that, or does it still feel like it was something different to you?
Very much so, yes. I do feel that this is part of a soul group. I do believe we travel in soul groups.
Yes.
I believe we travel with soul families, and the family that I have here, my parents, my brothers, aunts and uncles and cousins and everything, I think are all part of that group. I believe some of my very best friends may have been family to me in another physical life. I believe that we do this, and the way, and this helps me also understand when you find it's in spite of our environment, in spite of our religious upbringing or whatever, you will find child prodigies, people who are born with, you know, and you go, where does this come from? Because
yeah.
their environment surely
yeah.
didn't provide it for them.
Mm.
Their genetics didn't provide it for them. You know? So where is all of this coming from? Wisdom of the ages through a child, you know, or talent that is just, you set a child in front of a piano and they don't even know what a piano is, but they play, you know, Beethoven's Fifth. I mean, you know, and
yeah.
you're going, what is going on here? Yeah, I think that helps me at least to understand that that process. That and I know I've had glimpses or very lucid, vivid dreams that I know that were in the first person. That I know there were lives that I've held in the past. And of course, I'm from the Deep South Bible Belt. I was not raised to believe that. I didn't get that or get that influence from any religion.
I want to ask you a question here because I was interested to know what kind of responses, reactions you were getting, you know, as a result of your near-death experiences when you did endeavor to share some of the things that you had experienced and gone through. What kind of responses did you get? What happened around you?
That's a good question because the first few times, a couple of times I mentioned stuff to things to my mother, stories to my mother, and she had this funny look on her face, like, how did you know that, you know, or,
uh-huh.
you know, where did you hear that, did I tell you that, or, you know, it was just really interesting because at one particular, when I slipped into an NDE, when I was pronounced, and I was still in the ER, my father had come to the hospital to see me. They had gotten in touch with him. He was over in East Texas in the oil field, in the oil business at the time. He was way back in the country. When he finally got through two-way radio that I was there and he arrived, they were about to pronounce me dead at that point, and he asked to come in the emergency room to see me. My mother was sitting there. She, of course, had been burned putting me out by her hands, and she was wrapped and sitting looking out the window in what my father would have described later as like a drugged state. She's just staring out the window. He said, but she's talking to somebody. He said, there's nobody there, so he's assuming she's just high on, you know, morphine. And he says, I want to see my daughter. And the nurse tried to talk him out of it. The doctor tried to talk him out of it because, obviously, they didn't want him to see me in that state, I think, be the last memory he had. Of me. So, but he persisted. He went in through the double doors, and when he did, he said, it was the funniest thing. He said, the nurse was giving him heck because, he had cut my ankle and had pulled something. He said, had something in his hand that looked like a piece of cooked spaghetti. He said, it was a real limp, white looking thing. Well, it happened to be like a vein or something because, that had collapsed and I had flatlined. So the doctor, had never done an arterial cut down, what they call a cut down, or at that point, I mean, this is the only way I can describe it. And he said he stuck a needle into this thing. He said that he was kind of playing with, and he said that into this piece of spaghetti, stuck a needle in there, and he said it was right after that, he said, I heard beeps, blips, and he said they rushed me out of the room. Well, that's what started my heart back, you know. I mean, he was hearing me, you know, being resuscitated. And so I think, you know, and I forgot where I was going.
I had asked you, you know, if you shared the...
Yes, and when I was sharing this experience, I asked my father about that story. He said that he walked out of the room, and he said, and when he did, as soon as he ran, he went over to my mother, he talked to her, and she looked at him. He said she was talking to somebody out the window. He said, she turned around and looked at him before he could speak to her, and she said, it's all right, they've told me she's going to live. And he said she just laid back and went out. And,
wow.
And I asked my mother years later, I said, I've heard that part of my story, that part of the story from my father. I said, he said, you were talking to someone out the window. And she said, yes. She said, it was a figure. She said, I remember talking to somebody, it was a hooded figure in a shroud. And she said, I could not see the face. She said the face had it was in shadow. She said, but I could see the shroud, and they weren't talking to me with their mouth. They were just talking, she was saying, please don't let her die, please don't let her die. And she said, and he reassured me. It was a male. She said he reassured me, she will live, she will live. Everything is all is well. She will live.
Powerful
and
experience.
So I asked both of them separately. Years later, about that, to recount what happened when he first got to the hospital, and did she remember what she was doing and what was going on at that moment? And she told me the story, and she has seen it more than once around me, and at different times when I would go into slip into my NDEs, she had talked about seeing this individual again, and which was funny because. When Star Wars first came out, the movie, she said, oh, that's kind of what he had on. She was talking about the shroud that Alec Guinness wore, you know, as Obi-Wan, that kind of a shroud. She goes, that's what he was wearing. And I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, at least now I've got a visual that I can put with it. So I've heard different stories about this figure, and other people who are not connected with me in this lifetime have also seen this figure around me.
Wow.
Now, I have experienced this person as well, or this entity. I shouldn't say person. Entity. As I was growing up, this entity appeared to me in dreams. And I believe that we all get visitations in dreams many times, especially our loved ones who have crossed over.
Oh, absolutely.
And one reason that being, I think it is more, number one, our conscious mind is disconnected from the process, and our logic doesn't kick in and tell us that, you know, Aunt Sookie isn't really here. She died in 1974. You know, she's not really here. I'm not really seeing this. And it would make us less afraid, too. We'll be more open to them visiting us in dreams. I have dreams, repeated dreams, of loved ones visiting me. And I know the difference between that dream and just a common dream because they're far more lucid.
Yes.
I can touch them. I can sense them. I can smell them. I can feel the texture on my fingertips of their hair or if I touch them in any way. And I also know that I wake up the next day so energized and I take them with me throughout the day. This dream is like I'm buoyant.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
I know I have been visited, and even if it's just that we were talking about just simple things, I mean, it doesn't have to be a like she came to tell me where she buried, you know, her fortune. I mean, that's not what she came to tell me. She came just to spend some time with me, to talk about just, you know, have a cup of tea or something. She just came to visit me and to laugh and it was just a wonderful visit, you know. It was just a wonderful time to just to be with that person, and I... I can feel that person and take them with me the next day, and I just feel so uplifted. And I don't want to lose that feeling. I just want to hang on to it for every minute of the day and stay present in that remembrance of that dream, you know.
I've gone through that a lot, too, which brings me to a couple of points about this that I would like to share. First of all, is that when we do, when our bodies sleep, we don't sleep, of course, our bodies sleep, and they sleep so that we can go about our business. We actually move into a higher vibrational frequency whilst we're in the dream state. So we, we actually are connecting with these individuals. Not only, and this is the second part of the point, not only do we connect with individuals who are crossed over, but we also can and do connect with individuals who are still on the physical plane. For example, I'll have very lucid dreams about people who are very close to me back in England. And we are really, really together. And then, as you're describing, when I wake up, I feel really energized. I still feel them with me. And the telepathic dialogue continues. And the telepathy is not affected by time-space, because time-space really doesn't exist. So it's not that these beings aren't really there. They're just not vibrating at a low frequency in order to traverse on the physical plane anymore, but they're very much intact.
Oh, yeah. I suggest everyone keeps a dream journal, a little notebook by their bed, because don't wait till in the morning to jot it down. Turn on the light. Write it down. Pay attention to your dreams. Pay attention to signs and signals all around you. I have many times had, I believe spirits are around me right now. I believe that some stay with me all the while. Some of them come and go as I need them or just check in and visit. I don't always hear them, don't always see them, but I have had incidences where that has happened, and I have, and it's usually when I least expect it, you know.
Yes,
if I'm trying to make it happen, forget it.
Exactly. That's a good point, too.
Sometimes the thing you want to draw to you the most, you're actually pushing away from you because your conscious mind is caught up in the mechanics of it too much.
Good point.
So I do urge people, pay attention to your dreams. Pay attention to signs and signals all around. They're going to speak to you in ways that that they're hoping you'll catch and you'll get, you know. I will say this, even though I didn't believe in death, and I know that it is a transition and everything of that nature, and I have a very healthy view of that, and I've integrated that into my belief system. The other part of it is I lost someone back in 2003 that totally unexpected, and it just totally threw me for a loop. I'm prepared to deal with people transitioning and leaving and crossing over because I'm happy, because I know what they're going to experience. I do miss their physical presence.
Sure.
I do long for them, and I was not prepared for the journey that grief took me on. Grief is a whole nother matter.
Yes, it is.
You know, and it is something that you do go through stages of that. You have to turn loose, and you have to surrender to a higher power, knowing and trusting and believing, that all is well and that all is well with them. And when I did that, I do have indications of that person around me from time to time, unmistakable indications. Anything from lights flashing. I used to could walk into a room, any room in anyone's house, even if I was or at work, and the lights would flicker.
Yeah.
Now it's not. I mean, if it happens at home, you think, there's a short somewhere. But I mean, if it follows you constantly everywhere you go,
there's
another reason for that. Phones ringing or doorbells ringing and no one there. Phones ringing one time in a room. I had an indication of a phone off the hook, and in a room that I just put the phone in that room just to have a phone in that room, but I never used that room. It was more or less a storage area, and that phone would come off the hook all the time. Nobody ever went in that room. And it was usually, always pay attention to what you're thinking, what's going on, and how you're feeling at the time when you have these little incidences that you can't quite put your finger on. Because I had really been thinking about this person that I had lost and how I wish I'd had some kind of closure and was able to to reach them and talk to them. And of all things, I had the phone come off the hook in the room that no one ever went in, and the door stayed closed in twice in a row, I mean, within an hour's time, and which drew me in there. And then it dawned on me, are you trying to, is this a message? This is what, because if I could talk to you, if I could just pick up the phone and call you and hear your voice on the other end. And that's what I was thinking. And the phone kept going off the hook. I mean, so there's always little indications. You just need to tap into it. And don't be afraid to ask for signs. Don't be afraid to ask for signals. Don't, and talk. Say it out loud. You know, look, don't scare me, but, you know, let me know, you know, because I've done that before, too. Believe me. But I've had indications a lot of times of loved ones who have come and gone, and they watch. I know they come and just check. They're not voyeurs. They don't, you know, follow me around and just watch me, but they do come and go, and I've had indications that they do. One sign that I ask from spirit or from God, however you want to word that, is feathers. And I have feathers show up in the least likely places where feathers shouldn't be. I can get out of my car, go into a grocery store, come back out, and there will be a feather in the seat of my car with all the windows up and the doors locked. I can I will find them in the I can turn the covers back at night. There will be one on my pillow. Just interesting little things like this. It's feathers where feathers shouldn't be. That's one of the things that spirit does for me. I find coins a lot. Money, that's just a reminder that I'm always blessed and that prosperity is going to follow me. I'm always going to be taken care of. Money will always be in my path. I don't care if it's a penny or a dime. That's just a small symbol that they use for me. So there's often a lot of different things that people tap into. I have a friend who, anytime she sees white butterflies, and I mean, and white butterflies are not real common in a lot of places, but every time she sees white butterfly, she knows, uh-oh, pay attention. I also get indications of different, my ears will ring or click.
Yes.
And the right ear means one thing, the left ear means another thing to me.
I get that all the time, too. That's interesting. I want to tell you, we've only got a minute or two left.
Oh!
So, I know, it always goes by so quickly. Do you want to tell our listeners anything about your work, anything like your counseling and what have you that you'd like our listeners to know about?
Well, I'm currently doing a lot of writing, but my day job, let me talk about my day job a minute. I manage medical centers and community health centers, to be exact, and community health centers are for, regardless of ability to pay, here in Florida, of course, we are so multicultural here, we furnish health care board. We make it available for all our clients or patients to see a board-certified physician regardless of ability to pay. We service the underinsured, the uninsured, migrant workers and their families, from newborns or from pregnancy to you know, the end of their life all the way through. We take care of them. We take care of any we have homeless centers that we take care of the homeless, and that is to provide them with quality health care, just like, and we also have regular insured people, patients who come see us. But we do offer that service. They're called community health centers, and we are branching out. There are many throughout every state of the country, but we are trying to set a standard or a model for others to follow. Because healthcare in this country, I've grown up in healthcare. I've seen it in its heyday, and I've now seen it where it's now so riddled with bureaucracy, and it is manipulated and run by drug companies and insurance companies. And as much as I value my health insurance, and I'm blessed to have health insurance, it's very important, I believe, for everyone to be able to have access to the same privileges that I have. And so we provide that health care for them. It's also still a way that is a mission and a ministry. We consider our company, it's called Health Choice Network, but we consider our company to be a ministry. in this field, in this area of life, that and we do reach out to those who are in need. When people are their physical bodies,
I have to interject that our time is up.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
We never got a chance for you to talk about your work as a psychic, but I am going to build your page for you, and so people can reach you through towardsthelight.org. We've been speaking to Peggy Porter, an amazing woman who's had a number of near-death experiences. And again, if you go to towardthelight.org/Peggy Porter, P-O-R-T-E-R, you'll be able to reach her directly. I'm going to build that tonight. So we really want to thank you. You have been listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. And if you have found this show to be meaningful and uplifting, we'd like to ask that you support this program and or donate and our organization by making a donation. We do offer an abundance of support and services and resources through Toward the Light. So please, again, consider making a donation to help support this tremendous work that is bringing peace of mind to people all over the world. For more information, please do visit our website, towardthelight.org, and our media website, towardthelight.info. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will speak to you next week on another transmission of Toward the Light. Blessings and light to all of you.